Welcome to A Republic If You Can Keep It. I'm Mark Brewer. As we begin the new year, we're going to take a look back at our first year of this podcast with some of the highlights of what's been an incredible few months.
I'm Jeff Timmer. Mark and I are blessed to be surrounded by some of the finest political minds in the nation and thankful that so many of them were kind enough to share a half hour with us on this podcast. Today, we'll hear clips from five of them. Governor Michael Dukakis, a former Democratic candidate for president, Republican political consultant and Lincoln Project co-founder Steve Schmidt, Michigan senior Democrat in Congress Dan Kildee, former Republican National Committee chairperson Michael Steele, and a true American patriot, White House whistleblower Colonel Alexander Vindman and his wife Rachel Vindman.
We begin with Governor Dukakis. Since leaving politics, he's taught the subject to generations of college students in Massachusetts. We talked with him about the state of politics today and the attacks on voting rights.
What about just more generally, you know, the political system in terms of voting rights? I mean, we've got a huge controversy going on now around the country, right, in reaction to what we saw in the presidential election here in Michigan and other states. We're seeing efforts to really roll back voting rights. Do you have any thoughts about you know, where we are now in terms of voting rights and what we can or should be doing going forward?
Look, I don't think it's complicated. The Republican Party is doing everything it can to make it difficult, if not impossible, for people who otherwise might vote Democratic to do so. And what's happened in Georgia is not a mystery to me. I mean, yes, it is Jim Crow. That's exactly what it is. And it's a deliberate effort to make it difficult, if not impossible, for poor people, minorities, or whatever, to vote. I think what happened in this past election, putting aside the results, this enormous turnout, which, by the way, included a lot of new Republicans. People tended to forget that. This didn't depress the Republican vote. Whatever you think of Trump, and I think very little of the guy, he certainly was able to stimulate participation. I thought the running of the election was superb. Why would we want to suppress people's desire to vote? Because the more of that you get, the more participation you get, the more young people you're going to get involved, and the better it's going to be. You know, at the state and local level, and there are Republican governors and Republican legislatures, and you've got one of them, and we don't at this point have that, I'm happy to say. But what's been going on locally is that the quality and caliber, you'd have to speak for Michigan on this, because I don't know what's happening there in terms of people showing up with guns at in the state house. But the quality caliber of local government these days, is it better? Much better, many, many ways. I think a lot of that has to do with public administration programs in our universities and the kind of thing that we didn't have back when I was, and I suspect even you guys had to deal with and could take advantage of at the time. But the more of that we get, the better. And at the state and local level, I think the quality and caliber of government is really pretty good. You know, it's unfortunate that we have what we have at the national level at this point. And I hope at some point we'll get a hold of ourselves and both parties will produce good people and a high quality of government and governmental performance. But, you know, we should not be discouraged, even though this weird guy who I think is one of the most corrupt people that has ever served in public office, as well as one of the most dishonest. We hope we won't have that again. But thousands and thousands of young people in this country are interested, getting involved. Some of them are Democrats, some of them are Republicans. That's okay. I worked with some very, very good Republicans during the course of my political career, and they were committed to lots of very good things. You know, in Massachusetts, at least, I can't speak for the rest of the country, the environmental movement was largely Republican many years ago. It was the Republicans. And I suspect that may be what happened in Michigan. Planned Parenthood was a Republican thing in this state, not a Democratic one. you know, we've had good people on both sides, and I just wish I could explain to you what's going on in the Republican Party these days nationally, but I can't. I mean, it's very troubling. That's not where the US of A is. I don't care where you're coming from.
I would agree with that. You know, I've been very outspoken. I was one of the earlier Republicans in Michigan, at least, out speaking against Trump back in 2016 and what was going on in the party, right. And ended up, playing part in a national platform. We had organized a group last year called Republicans
and Independents for Biden
that was chaired by Christie,
the planet.
Todd Whitman, and Bill Weld was part of our group and got to know and work with those people. And one of our conversations were always, how can everybody be seeing things so differently than we are? This isn't about a disagreement about marginal tax rates. This is fundamental issues of right and wrong, of democracy, of fighting illiberalism. This is Yeah, well, and you mentioned Jim Crow. I get people scold me when I've said that Michigan is one of the states looking to change voting laws to answer a non-existent problem. And I've used Jim Crow. I used it in regard to what was going on in Georgia and used it here in Michigan. We don't want to react this way because it is putting up obstacles largely for Democrat voters, largely for black and brown populations to make it harder for them to vote. And that's fundamentally wrong. If we can, as a party, appeal to a broad swath of people, if we could only win by limiting who participates, that's a self-defeating future for any party. I don't know how any organization can just like that.
Not only that, they misread history. We're beginning to see some evidence, as you guys probably know even better than I do, of a move on the part of some Latino voters for the Republican Party. Are you surprised? I wish I could tell you that every Greek American is a Democrat. But we aren't. Why not? Well, because Greeks came over here, opened up those restaurants, ran little businesses, and are fundamentally kind of small business people. And yeah, they were very supportive of me for ethnic reasons, but are you surprised that an important group of immigrants from a particular part of the world like the idea of small businesses succeeding and policies that will help them? That's the U.S. of A. I'm not surprised by this. I mean, I grew up in this kind of situation. I'm very proud of my own ethnic group and the success on the whole that it has made in the United States. They're not all Democrats, I can tell you that. That's okay. That's okay because they're good citizens and they work hard and they try to help their communities become better places. And that's the last analysis what this is all about.
Sharing alarm with what Republicans are doing to our electoral system is their former national chairman, Michael Steele.
Every state is facing a myriad of challenges with respect to how Republicans are now executing their plan to set up the elections of 2024. Max Boot, who's a buddy of mine, strong conservative, a writer, thinker, has penned a piece that's in the Washington Post opinion section today talking about the Republican Party is basically their plot afoot to steal the 2024 election. It begins next year in 2022. It begins by changing the laws in states that puts the power over elections in the hands of secretaries of state and other election officials, and now stripping that away and giving it to partisans in the Senate or the House, Republicans, to decide, oh, well, we don't like the outcome of this election, so now we're just going to call it fraud and decide who the winner is, as we see playing out in Arizona after three audits that showed there was no fraud, there was no breakdown in the electoral process. So the system, they're now doing this fake audit in which they're going to come up with a fake result to make declarations about their that line up with their intent to take away the results of that election. look, the American people at the end of the day have to stop this. The people of Michigan have to stop this. You can't be deaf, dumb, and blind to what Republicans are doing. You can't sit back and go, oh, really? That's what's going on? Seriously? Because if you think it's not going to happen to you because you're on that right side now, at some point that worm turns. And do we want to set up a system where when it does turn, the Democrats come back and go, you know what? Payback's a bitch. Get ready. You know, because now it's our turn. And so that's not what our democratic system is set up to do. It's not how it should play itself out. The government is formed by the three most powerful words in our founding documents. We the people. That's the power given to us under our Constitution, written into it by our founders. And so the reality for us now as citizens is we have to decide whether or not this is the kind of system we want, where a failed loser president can then come back and say, well, I'm going to be reinstated in August, so let's get ready. I actually won this thing, and I'm going to take over the government. So if that's what you want, here's my suggestion. Pack your ish up, get on a plane, and go to Russia. Or go to North Korea, and you can live that life. But that's not what we do here.
Yeah, you're right, Michael, about Michigan being on the front lines, because all this stuff that's going on, the audit in Arizona, we're seeing local efforts here in Michigan to have that done at the county level. Jeff just talked about the voter suppression legislation. We've got one of these believers in the big lie who has announced her candidacy for Secretary of State here in Michigan, and our Secretary of State is the supervisor of our elections. Yeah. So you can see, in every way, parallel actions going on here in Michigan to what we're seeing in Georgia and Florida and Texas and Arizona. And it's very, very worrisome because, these folks, they don't give up. And I agree with you that while, Trump is continuing the grift, he's sitting on a pile of money that he raised last year. But every time he says something or Flynn says something or Powell says something, it just reinforces these folks who believe that somehow ultimately he is going to be restored or we're going to be able to change the election results. It just fuels that fire among this, and it's a substantial group. The polling numbers I've seen indicate that's 25 up to 35% of Republicans believe, the big lie, et cetera.
Oh, it's more than that. The number of Republicans. No, it's more than that. The number of Republicans who believe the big lie is closer to 75%.
Yeah, they think Biden's illegitimate, 75%.
Yeah, of yeah, Republicans. Yeah. 53-54% of those folks believe that Biden is not the president of the United States. So you make the most important point, Mark, which is that a lot of people have kind of bought into this lie. And I've been talking to a lot of social scientist types, not political scientists, because I get the politics. I know the politics, but trying to understand the sociology behind it, the psychology behind why this sycophantic loyalty to a man that everyone knows is a grifter, is a failed businessman who's basically lied his way. And those lies are catching up with him in places like New York for sure, but yet and still they hold on to him. And while at one point there was, people kind of almost like a throwaway talk about sort of cultish behavior, there's a lot of truth to it. I think there's a lot of aspects of this that we have to understand how people project leadership. And they're more specifically how people project their idea of leadership onto others. So they're looking for someone to right a wrong that they have perceived, even though they have not been directly harmed or wronged at all. But they sort of bought into this bigger notion that as a white individual, this culture, this economics, the politics are all working against us. This pushback on sort of the racial conversation, the pushback on the policing issues and other things that they have used as safety nets for them and their communities for 400 years that they could rely on are now being exposed and now being challenged and now being redesigned to better fit a pluralistic society, to better fit a more homogeneous community of people. And they resent that. Let's just call it what it is. A whole lot of white folks are just upset that the country's changing, and they have been for a long time, and that's fine. I get it. Look, you know, I've talked to some brothers. I sit there sometimes and go, okay, you realize you're black, right? Because when they're coming for you too. You're not going to get an exemption just because you believe in this crap that they're putting out here. So there are a number of psychologies and pathologies, quite honestly, that are playing themselves out right now. And I really think that we just can't look at addressing them through a political lens, that we also have to understand some of the psychology of what's going on behind this that really cuts into issues of race and economics family circumstances, situations, et cetera.
Yeah, you just nailed it right there. This is so many people look at this and cover this when the news media covers this is political disagreements, when it's something fundamental and cultural. It's much deeper than that. And I think that there are going to be entire fields of sociology and psychology that look at this period of time for decades to come and say, you know, when you think, how did it happen? And especially how did this group of weirdos, when you look at them, they are odd. They're a bunch of kooks.
Well, they are, but they are and they aren't, Jeff. And I think that's something that's very, very important to understand. That's your grandmama. That's your cousin. That's your cousin Albert. You know, that's Aunt Minnie. You know, that's the neighbor that you've known for 25 years that, you know, you would, you know, plant gardens with. These are people we are very familiar with that suddenly now we're seeing another side of that a lot of us scratch our head. I mean, you know, the stories of people who can't even gather at family events any longer because the moment Donald Trump's name comes up, it's like a bitch fest. Yeah, I mean, fight. People just kind of go at each other. And it's like, dude, over Donald Trump? Are you kidding me? I mean, you couldn't pick the worst figure in politics to have a fight over. I mean, I could see if we were battling over Ronald Reagan or Dwight Eisenhower or Bill Clinton and Barack Obama. No, we're battling over Donald friggin' Trump. So there is something else there that he's tapped into that a Reagan and an Obama who were quintessential communicators for their respective parties. But Trump even went beyond them because their ability to communicate didn't create brand loyalty. Donald Trump's ability created brand loyalty. So regardless of anything else that they discover, learn, know, understand, appreciate about Donald Trump, they will remain loyal. He was absolutely right. He told us how well he knew his people when he said, I could shoot someone on Fifth Avenue and no one would say a word. And it's true because he shot a lot of people on Fifth Avenue rhetorically and metaphorically speaking over the last 5 years. And what do we have to see for? Yeah, he lost an election. But what do you think is going to happen when he starts up at the end of this month with his new rallies, mm-hmm. which are basically revenge rallies, right? That's what this is about. And so we need to be aware of what it is we're looking at and dealing with and stop pretending like, oh, tomorrow will go away. Oh, this election will solve that. Because he's now no longer in office. That's not how this plays out, and nor is it how it ends.
Still to come, Congressman Dan Kildee, Lincoln Project co-founder Steve Schmidt, and Colonel Alexander Vidman on A Republic If You Can Keep It.
Epic MRA is a Lansing-based market research and public opinion polling firm with nearly four decades of experience accurately measuring public opinion about politics, ballot proposals, and other federal, state, and local issues. Epic MRA is one of the most quoted polling firms in the country. Clients include media outlets, school districts, colleges and universities, state agencies, local governments, labor unions, interest groups, and businesses throughout Michigan. Whether it's measuring voter opinion about who's up or down in elections, or if ballot proposals or legislation can earn voter approval, Epic MRA is known as the go-to Michigan pollster. Visit www.epicmra.com to learn more.
And then there's the little matter of the riot 1 year ago at the United States Capitol, and the clear message from Republicans that they don't want to talk about it. Steve Schmidt was prescient when he told us that the Select House Committee, which hadn't even been formed when we talked to him, would find direct involvement in the riots by members of Congress.
Kevin McCarthy is the highest ranked elected official in America's autocratic movement. He is an architect of the big lie. That big lie has poisoned American democracy. It led to a murderous insurrection, the greatest of all American inventions, bar none. It's not the automobile. It's not the airplane. It's not the semiconductor. It's not the chip. It's not the internet. It's not the lunar lander. It's the peaceful transition of power. And that came to an end in 2021, and it came in an end because of the incitement to violence by a defeated president. It came to an end because of the cynicism of the elected elites in this country, like Holly and Cruz and McCarthy, chief amongst them. And the fact of the matter is, I suppose, is that I guess I always imagined the American autocrat would have an accent. Maybe they would sound a little like Hans Gruber from the first Die Hard movie. But they look and sound just like all the rest of us. And some of them are people we've known for a long time. And that's what Kevin McCarthy is. But make no mistake about it. He is a person who has no fidelity to American democracy. He is a dangerous figure in this country. He must not be the Speaker of the House. And when you look at the state of affairs in the country, and you look at, you know, the political history of the country, the reality is that Democrats have a 5-seat majority, will lose probably 12 seats in redistricting. And there's only been three occasions in the last 120 years where the incumbent president's party has picked up seats in the first midterm. And the way you do that is to nationalize the election around a threat. And the threat is a real one. The threat is an autocratic one, and it's an existential one. And Kevin McCarthy, tragically, has pursued power over any sense of principle and has led him, the country, his conference, down a path where the big lie will yield now to the permanent lie, because the permanent lie and a harvest of 1,000 lies from that will be needed to protect the big lie, which will metastasize. It will metastasize into scapegoating and the stab in the back theory that is inevitable. And it will twist and turn in many, many poisonous directions, all of them deadly for a democratic republic, particularly ours, the oldest in the world.
Yeah, it's people have said to me privately about McCarthy, I don't know him personally, but people have said that he couldn't spell cat if you spot him the C and the T. But McConnell, on the other hand, is clearly smart and capable. And the two of them, while they may not be working in, you know, personal tandem, they're certainly working in strategic tandem. And the threat that now is posed by both of them pulling in this autocratic direction, I think maybe for different reasons, how would you size up the chances of this legislation, this January 6th commission, getting through McConnell's objection in the Senate?
I think that there right now, we'll see. There's enough House Republicans that I think it makes it difficult to keep it from passing in the Senate. when you look at the vote counts. I don't know that they'll filibuster it. We'll have to see. But I do want to say this about McConnell, because I think he is in a different position than is McCarthy, and it's important to understand some of the dynamics at play here. There's a line in the movie Stuff, which I love, right, where the PR guy looks at the pilots and he says, "No bucks, no Buck Rogers," right? All of this takes money, right? And when you think about the Republican Party, right, and this is, if you're on the East Coast, I suppose, might be a little bit sensitive, but let's talk about pipeline disruption, okay? Right, the Republican Party is funded by two pipelines, Green Pipeline, Red Pipeline. The Red Pipeline is the Trump pipeline. These are the small dollar Trump donors. Right? The Green Pipeline is corporate money. The Green Pipeline has shut off 80% of the funds that Mitch McConnell is used to receiving because of the insurrection on January 6th on the basis of the big lie. What is the big lie? Right. We should pause always to remember what it is for a few minutes. Here's the big lie. The big lie is that Donald Trump won the election. It was stolen from him in the dead of night when millions of black votes appeared out of the ether in places like Detroit and Philadelphia. That's the lie. There it is.
No, that's right.
Trump. Right. There's the lie. So what did they do on the night of the 6th after the deadly insurrection? They voted to throw out millions of black votes, to nullify them. And the only thing that matters is the malice of intent on these voting restriction laws and new Jim Crow that we're seeing all over the country to prevent black people from voting, or to give legislatures the ability to nullify elections after the fact, right? All you have to do is look at the malice, right? That's what matters, right? In interpreting the intent here. But at any rate, corporate America, who has black customers and black shareholders and black executives and black workers, is now confronted all of a sudden after signing statements in favor of racial justice issues, taking positions over the last few years. They are confronted now with a profound moral issue. Can they give money? And will their employee and customer bases in a transparent era that's interconnected by social media tolerate the company giving money to people that incited murder to people that incited insurrection and voted to nullify millions of black votes? And the answer has been no. So what does McConnell do? McConnell goes out and he says, and he makes a rare mistake, and he threatens corporate America. Right? He says, stay out of politics. Write your check, right? Which is a tell. Right? What McConnell right, the world that he lives in, this is a transactional world, right? I want power. I need money to maintain power. You need things from us who are in power. Write the check. But now corporate America says no. McCarthy made a different bet at the beginning. He went to Mar-a-Lago immediately after the inauguration. He secured the funding for his conference through the Red Pipeline, right? $50 million has come in through that Red Pipeline in the first quarter, through the Trump small dollar pipeline. The Senate Republicans have a problem. And now you have the hillbilly fascist in Ohio, J.D. Vance, right? You have these crazy candidates in Missouri, right? And so the Senate situation is much more dire in this moment in the relationship between Trump, who wants to kill McConnell and get him out. And I don't believe McConnell survives all of this in the end, right? There's a different drama playing out in the Senate as McConnell tries to appease, survive, sidestep, hopes Trump moves on to another target. as Trump gets ready to come back on the stage on Friday?
Well, it's been something to watch. You know, looking at even some of the statements of the 35 Republicans who voted in favor of the January 6th commission last night, which is, you know, quite an increase over the 10 who supported impeachment earlier in the year. Many of them still seem to be missing the mark. They're talking about, we need to figure out where communications broke down. We need to figure out how to harden security at the Capitol. Those are secondary issues to me. The primary issue is we had an armed lethal insurrection that was a mob that was summoned by the president and enabled and assisted by members of the House and Senate. We ought to be examining how it started, not how to make it harder for the mob to get into the Capitol.
Well, there is a, so for example, though, I'll take a point of personal privilege on the back end of this answer, because I do have a question, right, that no one's talked about, right, that I think we should talk about for a minute. But look, the simple truth is, I don't know what the number is, right, but I promise you, right, I'll bet my arm on it, right, I'll bet my left arm on it, right, the number is more than 10 members of Congress who, when they do a thorough investigation about what happened on the 6th, will have been in constant communication with the insurrectionists, with the people who came and beat policemen, and we would find all of that out. And I don't know if that number is 10 members of the Republican Conference or it's 32 members of the Republican Conference, but it's some number that's in the double digits that would shock the conscience. And I think they're utterly scared to death of it. One of the things that we have not talked enough about, but when you talk to people in the aftermath of the scene and as the investigation goes on, if you imagine if this was a Black Lives Matter group that did this, what the coverage would have been. These people defecated all over the hallways, including on the floors of the House and Senate, and they urinated on the floors and on the walls. And there's this scene where you have a Capitol policeman on video on the floor of the Senate where the QAnon shaman bursts into the Senate chamber. These are not British policemen. We armed the Capitol Police. A very serious question. If you're not going to shoot that guy who bursts into the Senate, who gets shot? Right. When is the use of deadly force authorized? So I do think, right, that the failure to secure the Capitol, whatever went on there, the communications breakdowns, were they on purpose? Were they not? But let's just say, having watched this, and again, the thing that I'm most pessimistic about, I suppose, is this, right? Is that I don't know if a nation can survive without a memory. And these events didn't take place 40 years ago. Right? They didn't take place 4 years ago. They took place 4 months ago. And what we saw that day was a clusterfuck, almost beyond imagination or description, and a failure of security that's mind-boggling. And we should demand as a nation to know everything that happened to lead up to the event of a Confederate flag being carried through the Capitol Rotunda by a 21st century fascist, in proximity to people wearing Camp Auschwitz t-shirts, and 6 million weren't enough, incited by the lying of the president of the United States. It's a moral outrage.
Sharing Smith's skepticism about Republicans and their unwillingness to probe the insurrection was Michigan's Dan Kildee, the senior Democrat from our state and a member of the House Majority Leadership Team.
I think they're afraid of two things. They're afraid of the truth, because the brand is not going to be well served by the way this story unfolds, because the brand is so directly connected to Donald Trump, who has become this sort of cult leader within at least the Washington version of the Republican Party. I mean, they have essentially handed everything over to him. And so it will reflect, it meaning the truth, would reflect negatively on that whole brand. And I think the other part of it that you touched on, that I think is a lesser part of it, but it's not insignificant. And that is that there are at least a handful of members of Congress that had more than a passing interest in the January 6th insurrection. They were engaged in it in some way. And what we don't know is the extent to which they were engaged. And that's what a commission would explore. But I still think the larger issue is the fear that, as damaged as the brand is, Kevin McCarthy and really Mitch McConnell to probably nearly equal extent, have made this sort of calculation that the 2022 cycle is one where they're better off holding on to the horse they're riding right now, and they're going to try to keep that three-legged horse from completely collapsing. And anything that adds weight on that saddle, they're going to try to resist. And so they're trying to just keep this thing going, with the belief that the other atmospherics, the fact that it's a midterm in, you know, a referendum on a party in power, that redistricting and their ability perhaps to affect access to the ballot could conspire in a way where they thread the needle and take advantage of the off cycle and get back power. And then I think they've talked themselves into the belief that then they can fix the party. Then they can fix their problems. They'll do it next time. And that's what I think is going on.
I agree. I would say I agree with everything you just said, but I would also underscore the lunacy of that belief that they hold. I mean, they spent 4 years thinking we can tame Trump. We can wait till Trump's gone. It's going to get better when he's gone. Every day, every minute that they've enabled this, allowed this to exist, this insanity has allowed it to manifest itself and take root in a way that they can no longer control, which is why they're afraid. They're afraid of their own voters because they know their voters have an alternate view of reality. They've helped shape that by perpetuating the lie, feeding them propaganda that has shaped this reality where there's, you know, a good share of the 74 million people who voted for Trump, you know, 2/3 or 70% of them in a recent poll said Joe Biden's not the legitimate president. That's insane. But it shows you the power of propaganda, and it shows you they won't step in and admit their complicity in it. They're not going to be able to fix it any longer because they've let it go too long. I think that the fact that they think they can jump out in front and tame this horse at some point is a foolish notion. It's very naive at this point, and it's very dangerous because we got past a lethal insurrection, an attempt to overthrow an election, and the first time we've not had a peaceful transition of power. They're doing everything they can to make sure that that's now the norm in 2022 and 2024.
Yeah. No, I agree. I think it's not a good strategy, but I think it's where they are, you know, and never mind the fact that it is a morally bankrupt approach to governing. I mean, it's just so irresponsible. It's just pathetic. You know, we have our problems, no question about it, but there's no parity. There's no equality. There's no equal responsibility when it comes to how far. I can't even call it the Republican Party because it's this cult of Trump that has replaced the Republican Party. Yeah, I'm sure there is a Republican Party working somewhere, but it's not in Washington. There's no adherence, no relationship to a conservative movement of any type, an ideologically conservative movement of any type. That's not what this is about at all.
Yeah, and it's not just in Washington. It's clearly in the state capitals. We see it in Lansing every day. We see it in the county parties. I mean, I would say that Donald Trump owns the Republican Party from the top of its head right down to its very toes. Today in Lansing, there was a group of Trump supporters from within the Republican Party, some, you know, the Melissa Carone, who was sitting by Rudy's side at the hearings in Lansing earlier this year. They showed up at the MIGOP headquarters demanding that Ron Weiser fire the executive director of the Republican Party. They're kind of cannibalizing and eating their own. His crime was back in November. He was quoted in an article saying Donald Trump lost.
Yeah.
People need to get over it. The election wasn't stolen. And so that's why they have hundreds of petition signatures from precinct delegates, and they showed it up at the party headquarters demanding he be fired. Their remarks are all, we know the election was stolen and Joe Biden didn't win. Donald Trump's the legitimate president. That's where the party is, right down to the precinct level. That's how far this has manifested itself.
You know, the thing that's really concerning to me about all of this is that I had some, I guess, foolish expectation that after Trump left office, because he lost the election after he left office, that there would be this period where some degree of rational thinking would return. And on the night of January 6th, I thought maybe that moment would accelerate when about a third of the Republicans that evening, after the insurrection was quelled, went to the floor of the House and said, okay, basically they said, I'm out. You know, and in fact, Lindsey Graham, I think, literally said that, I'm out. But just the vote we just had on the January 6th commission, which is another, I think, question that fits into this this arc that we're discussing, that number's been cut in about half. There's only, you know, 35 or so of members of the House on the Republican side that were willing to say, okay, let's have an obvious effort, a balanced effort to find the truth. And so I'm thinking that we're going to open the Republican Party back up again and sort of have the Trump era continue in some ways, but begin to dissipate. Quite the opposite has occurred. They're circling the wagon. And, you know, Kevin McCarthy, it's impossible for him to disappoint me. It is not impossible for Steve Scalise to disappoint me. And I have to admit that I consider Steve, while I have big disagreements with him, on a personal level, we've been good friends. He's bought in. I mean, this is just painful to watch. They're going the wrong direction. But they're making the calculation. And this is the concern I have. They're making the calculation that it's the right choice for them. And these other factors may at least allow them to talk themselves into the fact that they think they're right. And these other factors that are working against us in 2022 are a tough environment for Democrats. It's going to be a tough cycle for us. And my worry is that they'll read the wrong message. No matter what the outcome is, they'll read the wrong message.
Yes, there are a lot of negatives in 2021, but there are a lot of positives as well. COVID vaccines became available to all who are willing, and a majority of Americans are fully vaccinated. The COVID health emergency demonstrated the tremendous capabilities and dedication of literally tens of thousands of healthcare workers, first responders, and frontline workers in many industries. The economy is growing at record rates. Wages are rising, and poverty has been demonstrably reduced. And Michigan's future economy is showing strength with new opportunities as the auto industry becomes increasingly electric.
And the Lions actually won a couple of football games. Seriously, though, we thought it would be good to end this retrospective show with thoughts from a true American patriot, an immigrant who sacrificed his military career out of patriotism, Colonel Alexander Vindman. Alex Vindman blew the whistle on Donald Trump's outrageous attempt to extort Ukraine into helping him attack Joe Biden and captivated the nation with his testimony to the House Judiciary Committee.
You realize when you came forward out of sense of duty that you were putting yourself in direct opposition to the most powerful person in the world. Do you realize that, sir?
I knew I was assuming a lot of risk.
And I'm struck by that word, don't worry, that phrase, do not worry, you addressed to your dad. And he would have worried if you were putting yourself up against the President of the United States. Is that right?
He deeply worried about it because in his context, it was the ultimate risk.
And why do you have confidence that you can do that and tell your dad not to worry?
Congressman, because this is America. This is the country I've served and defended, that all my brothers have served. And here, right matters.
Thank you, sir. Yield back.
I really don't believe in this notion that if we just kind of like kept off the airwaves, we would be fine. Not with the way things are going with the far right and Trumpism. You know, there's a hit list. As soon as we went, I did the right thing and reported the president's wrongdoing. We're on at the top of that hit list. So there's no like going back to status quo ante, like a quiet life. Still be like on the anniversaries, but be the target, whatever the case might be. I probably could stay off Twitter and not attack Tucker Carlson for being anti-American like I did yesterday, and you know, and then get the expected response. But I have an opportunity to use my voice and be critical of him and his anti-Americanism, and I'll do that.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, thank you both for your courage. It's just remarkable. I admire you so much. But you have the advantage of a kind of an international perspective, comparing what's going on here in the United States to what you have lived through overseas. Can you give us a little flavor, a little comparison?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I'm on the board of a pro democracy group called the Renew Democracy Initiative, and
so am I,
and so is Rachel. We're starting a campaign in the next couple of days on adding the voices of dissidents and what they're experiencing, and sounding the alarm of the direction that this country is moving in. I have a good perspective that we're not Belarus. I'm writing something with a former deputy minister of foreign affairs. One-time presidential candidate that ended up being tortured and exiled. And so we're not there yet, but you could start to see a world in which we're headed down that path where institutions don't matter. Rule of law doesn't matter. It's not applicable to all people are above the law, or if they're associated with the president. Criminality, corruption is not held to account. Populist politicians can say and do anything and still attain office.
He just published a book titled, appropriately, Here, Right Matters. It's something that Colonel Vindman believes to his core.
And that's a wrap for this week's podcast. Our great thanks to all of our amazing guests for their contributions to our weekly discussions in 2021.
And I want to add our thanks to our fabulous producer, Walt Sorg, who doesn't get the credit he deserves. And to remind everybody that if the Republic is still standing, we'll be back in a week with a new podcast. I'm Mark Brewer.
And I'm Jeff Timmer. Here's to a prosperous, safe, and healthy 2022.
You can subscribe to A Republic If You Can Keep It on your favorite podcast app. A Republic If You Can Keep It is a production of Michigan Citizens for a Better Tomorrow.